Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 24. Tonight we have Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, Danny Ning, Lydia Tablet, and this is Matt Winter. Tonight we'll be discussing police militarization. We've been planning on this one for a while, but with the Ferguson, Missouri issue that's been going on, it's as timely as they come. I know that Lydia is particularly passionate about this topic. Lydia, can you please lead us off into this discussion?
Yeah, sure. So I guess sort of the current topic in the news right now is in Ferguson, Missouri, where an unarmed teenager was shot by local police, local law enforcement. The response has been protests from the local community, which has been fought, which has been met with quite a bit of hostility from local police and law enforcement, sort of escalating to becoming a sort of statewide and now kind of national attention news story, with tear gas and I believe rubber bullets and whatnot being used against the majority peaceful protesters, as well as the incarceration of journalists, which is a clear First Amendment violation of the First Amendment. So that's a kind of a general overview of the current news story, I guess. But kind of more generally, police militarization is sort of the idea that local law enforcement, police, sort of historically as we've known it, is becoming more and more like the troops that we see in Afghanistan. Military equipment being redistributed to communities throughout the country, tanks, weapons, whatnot. And kind of the discussion right now is whether that's necessary, whether that sort of empowers local police to maybe think they have more authority or liberty to use these items than they probably do. There's a lot of different issues and perspectives kind of off of this topic, but generally that's how I would summarize it kind of off the top of my head. Yes? Did anyone want to add in any anything else to my my summary there?
Well, I'll go ahead, and I was waiting for others to speak. So, when talking about Ferguson, and I've observed a couple of things, it seems to be there a few things that I've seen that are going on there. There's a racial element, almost profiling.
Sure, yeah, I should have included that. Absolutely. Yeah.
So this is a area that used to be predominantly white. Now it's predominantly black. There was an incident that sparked the whole situation where what was his name? Is it Mike Brown? Black man who robbed a convenience store was shot because of that. Was shot, and killed because of that.
In response to that, sure.
Yep. And so that kind of started off, a riot type of situation, or almost a political debate between individuals who said he was, who suggested he basically was victimized, and individuals said, this is a confrontational situation. Police used force that was
necessary, yeah,
in order to contain the situation. So, and there isn't a lot of clarity behind that, but there was a lot of back and forth between the sides, which, essentially, from what I've observed, it started almost racial rioting is basically what's been going on there, right?
Predominantly, yes.
Yeah. So it's it's difficult.
I wouldn't say exclusively, but yes, predominantly.
Yeah. So it's, you know, in that type of situation, you have, I don't know, you have probably political motives on each side to contain the situation or to aggravate the situation. So it's, you know, the topic of the podcast is militarization of police, but it's in any situation like that, there's always somewhat of a fog. It's not a clear black and white as to what's been going on.
No pun intended, right?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. I think part of it is that what they want to do is an overwhelming show of force. So in order to get the people to comply, they're using hardware that otherwise would not have been available to them had the federal government not just handed it to them on a silver platter, meaning you end up with a local police department driving around a vehicle designed to handle an IED. And from what I know, there are sheriffs right now saying that they need this escalation of force based on what's happened within American cities at this point. So it's justified to these sheriffs that they have this device that's actually being given to them for free on loan by the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army provides these things. It's not like the police departments have to pay for them. The U.S. Army just happens to have all these extra vehicles that they're giving out to police departments.
Yeah, we're going to listen to a clip, though, that shows that about a third of all the military hardware given out has actually been bought new extra to give out.
And that's Eric, before we get on to what Eric's talking about, would you play the clip that I gave you this week? I'd like to start off with the jerks who are trying to say they know what they're doing.
Can you give me the clip you supplied for the Massachusetts clip?
Correct. Yeah, it's three sheriffs from Massachusetts who are going to explain the justification of the elevation of force.
Here we go.
Here we go.
AG says that he is deeply concerned that the deployment of military equipment in vehicles sends a conflicting message. For days, we have been seeing Bearcat armored trucks on patrol in Ferguson, body armor on police who carry high-powered rifles. Some say it's time to demilitarize the police. New at 6 tonight, News Center 5's Kelly Tuthill sat down with three local chiefs for their perspective.
In the past decade, federal grants have supplied police nationwide with military-like gear to help fight the war against terrorism. And that gear was used last year to capture the Boston Marathon bombing suspect in Watertown. But after scenes like this in Ferguson, Missouri, local chiefs say they object to the criticism that local police have become militarized.
All of our equipment, all of it, whether you characterize it as military or not, is defensive.
The phrase militarization bothers me as well, because I don't believe that's what it is. It's simply me as the chief in my community preparing my officers.
In Massachusetts, several regional law enforcement councils are on standby with specialized gear they say is made for police, not the military. Many local communities, including Tingsboro, do purchase high-powered rifles from the military.
There has been a fundamental shift, and it was a necessary shift, and our officers have to be ready to engage, for example, that active shooter in the school.
It's rising to the level of the threat that we've seen, unfortunately, in America.
For years, Concord Chief Joe O'Connor worked at the Transit Police, where he said communication was the key to having police peacefully deal with protesters at everything from sports celebrations to Occupy Boston.
We have equipment that we are prepared, but we have good community policing programs in place that we can have discussions with people, particularly people that who want to gather and express themselves.
I'm Kelly Tuthill, WCBB News Center 5.
Looks like two things here. First of all, they start out by saying they're defensive use. And particularly in Massachusetts, I have a problem with this because after the Boston bombing, now that was a horrible event. We can all agree with that. They were cowards and they bombed an event that absolutely
was a
tragedy. We're not lone wolfing yet. Let me finish my point. All right. So what I'm saying is defensive. How could you ever possibly say going door to door, forcing your way in without a warrant is a defensive measure? That's not defensive, that's offensive. And during that time, they walked around with military hardware and they they intimidated people using that hardware. That is absolutely not defensive. And secondary, here's my biggest deal about this most recent kind of criticism that's come out. They said that they are using this hardware as a response to the rising threat that we've seen in America. That was a direct thing that they just said in that quote. I'm asking, what threat? How many IEDs have gone off that have blown up cop cars in America? How many? I'd like to know. How many IEDs have gone off and blown up a damn cop car that have made it justified to have an IED-proof vehicle on the streets in the United States? I will buy you a beer if you can give me one example.
Right. And this is in a lot of ways, you know, sort of the same thing we see with NSA spying or other means of alleged security, is that, you know, there's no amount of money that's too much to be spent. There's no invasion of privacy or violation of rights that is too far in the name of security. And to object or to claim otherwise would be to be unpatriotic or, isolationist or something.
Well, the police force used to be officers of peace, protecting the peace, ensuring the peace. Now it's moved into law enforcement, and now the law enforcement is proven guilty before even you're faced in a court of law. So just that's what disgusts me about this clip that Matt, you brought up, that this Boston bombing thing, there was no proof that it was those two kids doing it, and they brought out the full force of the militarized police force, just showing, shutting down the whole town for these two kids, and no trial, no, just proven it guilty instantly, no video proof. People have said, the governor said, oh, I saw the video, and then asked specifically about the video. He said, oh, well, I was told about the video. There was absolutely no proof, but yet the entire country was in grips that we had to find these two kids, that no amount of force is unnecessary. And my whole point is they've changed into law enforcement that you're guilty before you ever even have your day in court. And then – And what is law? It's based out of a court system, and you can't even face the court system because you're guilty. So it's not even law. It's a totalitarian government that's totally shouldn't and has become accustomed to people. And it just disgusts me that we allow it to be this way, and people are happy about it. Half the population sees this Ferguson thing and says, oh, yeah, with these riots, we need a police force like that to stop the riots from happening. I say bullshit. That the rise of the police force, that this is a cause and a reaction from past transgressions, that this law enforcement mentality that the cops have of no all force, this entire force bared upon you with the full weight of the law behind you, them, when you don't even have a day in court, and the people are going to react worse and more just like this kid did. And I don't like this whole news thing about saying he was a teenager, unarmed. The guy attacked a cop, and his gun went off. Who knows who pulled the trigger, and then he came back and charged the cop. That's the kind of reaction that deserves a little force of action. The cop probably did everything in his right, honestly, that did. But what my point is that the mentality of that kid that did it, the young adult that did it, is from this whole militarization, this whole law enforcement mentality of the police force today, that it's only going to get worse as time goes on. And I think it's going to – I don't know. It's when you build things and there's always a counter to it. So it's a self-serving mechanism for government and the media to be saying that, yeah, this is all defensive and this is why we need to have it. And it's completely self-serving bullshit.
I'd like to kind of piggyback off of something you just said, Kirk. One thing that I've kind of been interested in for a while, I watched a, probably half hour length video about this several months ago, but was on the in Detroit where emergency response times are upwards of like 40, 50 minutes. This, and I'm guessing probably some of you are aware, but we may have even discussed it previously, but they've started sort of a private security agency called, I'm trying to think what it's called, the Threat Management Center. And basically, the one idea that really sticks out to me in the interviews and documentation I've seen of them is this idea, kind of the head of the organization talks about, you know, the difference between what he does or what their organization does and local police do is the difference between the two is one is prosecution, one is prevention. So police, their objective is to find people after a crime has been committed, to prosecute those that have committed a crime. Whereas this organization, their top priority, their goal is prevention. So sort of creating circumstances or situations in which crime is not able to be to be committed, I guess. I'm just really interested in that idea of sort of prosecution versus prevention. I think ultimately that should be our goal of, you know, creating an environment where crime is not able to happen, not prosecuted. I don't know. I just think that's a really interesting idea.
Well, I just think there's too many laws in the first place.
And I agree with you there, too.
It's completely.
I have a decent clip, a recent TV clip on the Detroit Threat Management Center that probably could provide
some
background
on that. Yeah, do you want
to
throw that up?
Yeah.
We all know Detroit's in trouble. A bankrupt city full of crumbling houses, abandoned factory buildings, and a fast dwindling population. But while the politicians, unions, and investors slug it out in bankruptcy court and grasp for their share of what little cash the city has left, ordinary citizens are left to make do in a city with no functioning government. This is what happens when people are left to their own devices. This is Anarchy in Detroit.
You will not invest and you will not live any place that's unsafe.
The one thing most everyone agrees that the government should provide is police. But in a city where emergency response times are more than 5 times the national average, private security firms like Threat Management have even taken the law into their own hands.
We escort people into their businesses. We make sure they safely get from their car to their business. The way we do that is by circling their building before they actually enter, looking for threats before they have a chance to lay in wait for that person coming to open their business. These escorts are $10 for each escort in, and it's very affordable. We used to have a problem here in Detroit with hijacked cigarette trucks. In one situation, they actually took the truck, took hostages, and physically took them to a different city. We stopped all those hijackings, and for this other company, it's a $100 million company. So those are the companies that basically afford us the ability to go out and help people for free.
But this isn't just some vigilante group engaged in Wild West shootouts.
What we bring to the table are a lot of heroic people that are altruistically motivated to create change in people's lives and keep them alive. And in 20 years, not one person who came to us for help has been injured. Not one person has been killed. They came to us for help, and not one person on our staff has been killed. Police officers,
a heck of a statement.
Police departments are tasked with arresting people after they've broken the law. So if you think about it, the core values and the metrics by which they are measured, law enforcement's way of thinking is based upon prosecution, and ours is based upon prevention.
Detroit's crime rate is still 5 times the national average. One factor that has led its citizens to flee the city, where about a third of the land is vacant and abandoned.
I attribute the bankruptcy and all the economic issues to a lack of safety. If you don't feel safe, why would you invest in a business there? If you don't feel like your employees are going to be safe, if you don't feel like your investment's going to return, if you have a family and you get educated, why would you not leave a place that is not safe? You would. You would leave any place that's not safe. So a lot of people left for that reason. And once the people are gone, the businesses are gone, there's not going to be any tax base. So you can't have a flourishing, thriving city if it's unsafe. And a lot of times they think of it just the opposite. People in general think if we had more money, if we had a thriving city, we could then have safety, which is not true. In the absence of safety, you will have nothing.
So that's really, when talking about the Detroit threat management versus mm-hmm. Ferguson, that's a proactive versus reactive
right.
situation.
Right.
Yes, and they're... If police force did what that company would do, they'd be sued to high heaven. And our government limits what the police force can do, which ties the cops' hands, and they are forced into a corner that where they accept this militarization as an end to the a way to get around what they are being hamstrung by. And it's... And I would guarantee that I would love to see how much that company charges versus what the police force charges for vicinity.
Well,
I would bet that the private force is more reasonable than the public police force.
I was going to say, I think I don't know that I can answer that with 100% accuracy, but I know in an interview I saw, they're predominantly subsidized by kind of local businesses, like million-dollar businesses that I think particularly they identify cigarette companies, which are a primary target of theft, and those companies sort of the cost that they're willing to pay to protect their businesses sort of offsets.
Yeah, it's the free market in works. It's what anarchy does. It solves itself. When a problem arises, you go out there and fix it. You don't need the government to fix all your problems, which people are just totally screwed in the head that they think that the government is the answer to everything. And it doesn't have to be that way.
And yeah, I can agree with you there. One of, I would say, my favorite things about sort of libertarian ideology is the emphasis on creativity and problem solving. And I think the more things you put under the responsibility of government, the more you have a monopoly sort of on creativity, new ideas, and problem solving. But the other thing I was going to say, and I just am kind of now thinking this is, I think I'm maybe sounding a little too much like have one side of the opinion or whatever in this Ferguson thing. The Libertarian Party, I think the National Party, put out a statement, like a week ago, maybe, sort of summarizing, the events in Ferguson, Missouri, which I thought was really, really well done. And the point they made, obviously addressing issues that would be on sort of the libertarian agenda, that being First Amendment rights of jailing journalists, that kind of a thing. But they also, you know, mentioned these protesters in Missouri are not 100, you know, like Eric was saying earlier, it's not exactly black and white. These protesters specifically, obviously the looters, are violating property rights, which is also, you know, something as libertarians we can't really support. So I just thought I'd add that in as a comment.
Yeah, the Ferguson situation, it's anytime you get into a war-like scenario, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's very aggressive. There's just a lot of gray. You can't really mm-hmm. you can't really discern what's completely happening on either side. So, And to me, I don't discount the possibility that there is politicization occurring on both sides of the event. Where you draw in advocates on the minority side in Ferguson and also on the government side, and so it becomes more of an aggravated situation because it's under a spotlight essentially. So there are opinions to be gained, and you see something like this occur.
The irony, of course, being that the majority of people who identify as sort of minority rights activists also overwhelmingly favor large government, which inevitably
which is causing this.
More, yeah, which inevitably means more laws that need to be enforced.
That's what the laughable thing about it is. Yeah, so these people want a larger government to have larger handouts, or they're getting their votes. They don't really care. They're just getting something for their votes in a way. And it's and so when something like this happens, it's an excuse to go out there and riot. We see it in sporting events. When your team wins, people, college kids, all run out to the street and ransack streets. A fellow community member gets shot and it gets blown out of proportion. People go out there and riot. It gets used by the media, by politicians, and I don't think that this is just, to me, this example, it doesn't do the justice of the police militarization. To me, this is a situation that's gotten out of control, that, yeah, there's liberties have been stomped on all over the place, but it's a chaotic scene. What isn't a chaotic scene is a frickin' SWAT team rushing into an empty house or an occupied house, coming in full garb, assault weapons drawn, shooting every dog they see, anything that moves. And that, to me, is the militarization of the police force for something that's just a petty crime that's not even harming anyone. And to me, that is the... what really is damning in our society today, and it's really going to drive, to me, that's why this Ferguson thing is an example of just playing in the left-right field, or the diversive field of people fall on both sides, or, oh, yeah, great, we got to stop these rioters, or screw the police, you know, we got to show our force against them, and there's so much more going on behind the scenes of the anti- police militarization and the essence of government control.
So essentially you're saying, you know, Ferguson is to a large degree political theater on both sides.
To me, Ferguson, I could care less about. I think it just shows, well, I care about it, but it's, to me, not in the police militarization. To me, it's just one example out of a thousand. It's a needle in the haystack there should be greater things to view on that, because if you focus on Ferguson, you're not going to get anywhere. It's the left, right. It's the division thing that you can't argue. But if you go on some of the clips we have of the SWAT team busting through unarmed homes and busting down through the wrong houses, killing kids and killing pets, and that's the stuff that wins an argument every time of the unnecessary use of force.
Is there a clip you have in mind, Kirk?
I think you have plenty to choose from.
Is there a specific?
I don't remember the specifics. That mayor one would be a great one, I think.
Okay.
It was a calm evening here in idyllic Berwyn Heights, Maryland, until armed police raided the home of an unsuspecting family.
I heard my mother-in-law scream. It was a really frightened scream that didn't make any sense. She said, "Shy, I think it's SWAT."
The reason? A box of marijuana delivered to his house. Though no
is it plan?
Connected him to the drugs.
It's pretty quiet if it's plan.
For more than 4 hours after shooting his two
it was very muted.
We didn't have a warrant. We didn't have a front door. We thought that there was some drug dealer out there who thought we had the drugs. And we had a house that was torn upside down with a search and two enormous pools of blood.
This a box of pot got delivered to this house by the UPS mail or something.
Happened to hundreds of families.
This is what we missed at the beginning of the clip. Are you continuing?
Violent raids on homes like this one in suburban Maryland are increasing across the country. Critics say they're turning American neighborhoods into war zones as equipment from overseas conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan gets repurposed for local police departments.
Over the past few years, local police departments like this one in Boston have been given millions of dollars of military equipment free of charge. Congress created the program to reuse hardware like these vehicles left over from U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Isn't there supposed to be something talking?
Can you not hear it right now?
No, there's no audio.
Can anyone hear this or no?
I could, and now I can't.
Well, I paused it. Could you guys hear it?
I could, and then now I can't.
Yeah, there was only just...
Danny, you could hear it, right?
There was only 15 seconds that we could all hear, and then it was quiet in the beginning, and then 15 seconds of the lady, and then it was all quiet after that again.
And I think Lydia was hearing it, and Danny, were you hearing as well?
No, I think they were hearing exactly what I heard.
No, it eventually went silent, Eric, and it sounded like road noise in the background.
Okay, hold on a second. Okay. I can go back.
I just pick a new clip. It's just one example.
Let me give it another shot. Tell me if you guys can hear this.
It didn't make any sense. She said, "Shy."
Nope.
I think it's SWAT.
The reason?
No, I can't.
Box of marijuana delivered to his house. Though no evidence connected him to the drugs, police didn't leave for more.
Or not? Not like that.
Yeah, having some issues here.
Then 4 hours.
How about now?
After shooting his two dogs with a machine gun.
Very.
We didn't have a warrant.
Yes.
No, you can.
Okay.
That's what we heard before.
That there was some drug dealer out there who thought we had the drugs. And we had a house that was torn upside down with a search and two enormous pools of blood.
Shy eventually recovered and even adopted new dogs. He's doing the same thing again, Eric.
Just done.
Of families every year.
You can't hear it?
His county nope. Alone.
That's exactly what we heard before, like actually even less.
Are increasing across the country.
It's the same thing. It's going to happen again. This is. I just drop it, Eric.
Might be something with the clip.
Yeah. It's like a... like a Photoshop clip where you can hear certain layers of the clip, but not others. So, I would just pick a previous one because that was the last one I sent you. There's a couple of previous ones that are kind of about the same thing. How about just an example of a SWAT raid?
Go with this one here. Does it sound better?
Yep.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Shanklin. I hope you guys are having a great day. If you live in New Hampshire and you're a peaceful person, you might be labeled a domestic terrorist, and I'm not joking around. The Concord, New Hampshire Police Department recently stated in a purchase order that they needed a ballistic-engineered armored response counterattack vehicle, what they also know as a pretty big armored tank, to use against Free Staters. Okay. It also goes on to list them, the Free State Project people like me that are peaceful and voluntary, they labeled them as domestic terrorists in the purchase order. No joke. We're talking about a group of people who believe you have the right to do whatever you want as long as you don't infringe on others. That sounds pretty peaceful to me, right? Their whole idea is getting rid of the war on drugs, is getting rid of taxation, which is a form of terrorism and theft. Which would, of course, end all the wars, would end so much corporatism that is going on at the top of government. That is what the Free State Projectors call for, a peaceful, free society. It seems to me the real terrorists are not the Free State Projectors, no, but the people who keep terrorizing the Free State Projectors, namely the Concord, New Hampshire Police Department and the feds and the state governments and any form of a violent monopoly that doesn't like freedom and peace. So, I find it kind of funny when a bunch of terrorists who are terrorizing somebody else label them as terrorists so that it can distract the real terrorism, which is themselves. The Free State Project could use your help. They are trying to...
Yeah, it's... I just can't believe the garb that they all wear. And I love it. Remember during... At the beginning of the Gulf War during George W. Bush's time, my cousin was in the Army, and my aunt and uncle had to do a neighborhood or a community drive to raise money for my cousin's group in the Army to get them body armor. And nowadays, all the cops in America seem to be having them in every town. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, one of the interesting ideas I picked up in the clip that we tried to play and for whatever reason just didn't cooperate was the repurposing of firearms and equipment that have been used overseas and are being given, you know, to you know, towns and counties because of the fact that they're no longer being utilized by the military. And, you know, I don't know if that plays an element into what we're observing with the militarization of the police, where you have, you know, equipment that's just going into disuse, so they're redeploying.
I think it's an excuse. I think that's a convenient excuse for adding this type of industrial military level hardware into public police departments, because it's going to make the industrial military complex a lot more money if this becomes a new mandate.
Well, yeah, and the training involved, it creates a bigger budget for all the local states and cities to have this training, and it's only going to be continued perpetually until all of us rise up and stop, you know, this madness. And I lost where I was going with it, but the Department of Homeland Security states that who's the domestic terrorists? It's exactly what that last clip said. It's people that just don't buy into the government's BS thrown down on us, that don't agree with all the laws being thrown at us, that you're not harming anyone, yet you're still breaking the law somehow, which justifies a SWAT team raiding your house. Give me a break. It's going to backfire in the long run. And it's creating domestic terrorists and that are willing to stand up to the government. And so that's why it was my rant in the beginning. It's a self-serving thing. It's just once the government creates this stuff, there's any time you create anything, you'll get someone to follow it. And just it's the law of supply. Once you supply it, it creates the demand. And it's so self-serving, and it's just such a it's just ridiculous that our government is turning on American citizens that are peaceful and just want to live their own lives, and it's that they're beginning to fear Americans, and it's sad, and it's that's the excuse being generated, that these homegrown terrorists, these domestic terrorists are arising, that we need this police force to do it, and they use every little example of something like Ferguson or the Boston bombing or any little event that can be blown out of proportion to justify this growing control that government is strangling us. And it's going to backfire. It's government is getting way, way too controlling and way too in depth in people's lives. And at the same time, people are just rolling over and saying, well, it's the law. It's, you know, it's, what can you do? It's the government we have, and people are so far removed from the ideals of liberty and the founding of this country and what the basis which founded the country that we've to found this country on. And I just, it's coming to a head eventually. I mean, it's the extremes are growing on either end, and it's going to butt heads.
In a lot of these situations, what I've observed, when you have heated conflict or confrontation, you know, for example, in our area, I have a hard time believing that we're going to see an example, as to what's going on in Ferguson.
Well, no, that's not. I wouldn't say that's necessarily true.
Yeah, I disagree.
Yeah. Well, even wasn't that just recently, like in the last 6 months, there was that shooting of the couple in Eden Prairie on, I forget if it was Highway 5 or Highway 12. I mean, supposedly they were, like, They had a knife or something, but I never heard any sort of confirmation on that following
Highway 212.
Yeah, or was it 212?
Yeah, it was only like 5 miles from me here.
Yeah,
I was going to say. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's the thing that immediately comes to mind is that, yeah, I don't know. That I actually was just thinking of that recently.
Well, I think
yeah, the woman in that case had a significant criminal background.
Right. But I think then the argument becomes sort of kind of going back to the prosecution versus prevention or premature use of force, which is, I guess, a more subtle argument in the whole kind of scheme of this. But
see, I don't even blame the police force. I don't even blame the cops. I blame the so-called citizens of each state and each in America, where they think that, oh, we need to stop all crime. We need to stop drugs from inner street. We need to have a bigger government that'll stomp all this stuff out. And they ask for our government to do it. And it's this mindset in Americans today that we're not solving the problem. The problem's only supposedly getting worse. There's more and more crime happening. There's more and more drug use. There's nonviolent crime people are drinking and driving. We need to stomp this out, even though they're not harming anyone. But we need to increase the penalties because it's still happening. We need to stomp this out, and it's ruining people's lives. And that's why – so when people get into these circumstances and confrontations with police force, they go all out. They've been through the system. They know that – I'm not going through this. The full weight of the government onto someone is not something easy to deal with. And it's easy for – I can see someone getting that mindset of, well, this is my last stand. You know, I'm going to go all out, in a standoff. Like some of the clips we've seen, and I don't know, it's just – and it's what is portrayed in movies. It's the mindset that's generated in people. And then once that happens, people's mindset are, all right, we need more law enforcement. We need more laws because this bad stuff is happening. I think I should go out there and vote for these politicians to create this rule over you to force you not to do that. And if you do something wrong because it's the law, then you should be thrown in jail or fined or in prison, I don't know, whatever new punishment is generated in society today, because none of it's working. It only feeds on itself. We have the biggest population of imprisoned people in the entire world. We have more laws than any country that's ever existed in the world and in the history of the world. And supposedly we live in a free, liberty-minded country? Give me a break. And I don't blame the cops. I blame people. It's this mindset of, oh, I just driving down the road today. It's drunk drivers, or alcohol-involved accidents cause 25% of the deaths on highways. All right, so 75% of deaths aren't alcohol-related. So what caused that 75% of accidents? And do you think that whatever caused that didn't have any effect in the 25% that had alcohol in them? Give me a break. When I went through this alcohol assessment thing lately, they said that someone drives on average 500 times before they ever get a DUI. Yet we are, as a nation, are accepting that this more and more stomping of nonviolent action and non-harmful action. A friend of mine just got a DUI by sleeping in her car. She decided to fall asleep in her car and got a DUI. And now her life is going to be pretty much shit for the next year. And she's got a baby girl, and she was being responsible and not driving. But because she was in her car, she's going to get, the full force of the law, the zero tolerance. Kids bringing little toy guns into schools are getting expelled, suspended for doing nothing. The kid, one example I read, the kid turned himself in. He realized he brought a gun in his backpack by accident, a little toy plastic gun. And the whole zero tolerance force of government came down upon him. It's so sad, and people just accept it. I don't get it. It drives me crazy. And then people cry about liberty? No, it's end this bullshit of that we need to solve all these little crimes and we need more and more government to stomp it down. It's because everyone fears their frickin' neighbor when everyone just wants to live and be peaceful. And it's things get straightened out, just like how what in Detroit. When a business is faced with a certain issue, they solve it. Just let the people do it. It drives me crazy. Sorry.
You got a little passionate there, Kirk.
No, I don't get it. I deal with everyone I talk to. People say, "Oh, you sound like a crazy man." Well, yeah, I'm sorry. It's I see where this is leading, and this is exactly what we're coming down towards, a Stasi state.
You know, okay, though, I've got something. Of your recent rants, that was one of your better ones. So I will applaud you there.
Here we go.
All right. I deserve it. If I was a cop, I'd want to go in through the SWAT training. I'd want to play with all these tools that the military has. Why the hell not? I'd want to be wearing body armor. It's why the hell not? It's cool. And then once you're in, but then they train you that, oh, you know, all this stuff is lethal. These people can do this. And this example is pushed down their minds that, all right, you got to do this, got to do that. And people just, it's the human reaction. People get shot. People get, the wrong people get shot. And it's, unfortunate at times. It's just a way of life. People die every day on highways just driving. It's not a safe activity, life. It's a dangerous world out there. Nature's freaking a bitch. And we've trained ourselves, we've manipulated nature so well that we think we're impervious to harm. And no, it's there's consequences to actions. And I see it as being in driving, where you got to have all these laws, just that you got to have the signs of the right location. We got to have turn lanes. You got to have certain traffic signals to make traffic safer. And stupid little accidents happen more and more because driving is supposedly safe now. And so many people are just playing on their phone, which doesn't even bother me. It's just if you're able, but just make sure you're paying attention to the road still. It's, accept the consequences of your harm. Don't sit there and do something wrong and claim that, oh, it's the government's fault. There wasn't a sign in the right spot. I'm going to hire a lawyer and sue the government that I caused this accident because the frickin' sign wasn't right. No, use your frickin' eyes, your own judgment. It drives me crazy, but how the government is changed to where, oh, it's if there's not a law, then it's all right to do. It's malarkey. There's no responsibility anymore, it seems, and it's only getting worse. And this kind of mentality is what's feeding this police militarization, and it's only going to get worse. And, of course, the cops are going to get more and more body armor, more and more equipment, and with this surveillance state and, oh, someone has committed this crime, let's send the full force, the police force raiding down their door, and hopefully they got the frickin' address right, busting through your door in a full police garb. And we talked about frickin' 3D printers producing clothing. So in the future, and we're supposed to just bow down to a police officer? You never hear of someone in a costume or that's going to impersonate a police force? Well, that's what it's going to change to in the future is criminals are going to start dressing up as cops, as a police force, as this SWAT team force that no one's going to know who's who because they're all freaking in a burqa garb. I look at ISIS and I look at our SWAT teams. It looks like the same freaking thing, just different cultures. Putting fear in the citizens. You better do what I tell you to do. Sorry.
No, go on, Kirk.
Might as well continue.
I don't even know where to go away from here now.
Go ahead.
Oh no! I mean, do I just sound like a total raving lunatic?
Yes.
Do I not preach any liberty? What I'm saying is there? Is there no sense, no common sense involved?
A raving lunatic that I can sympathize with. Let's put it that
way. I would agree with that.
Kind of a comment I wanted to make too. Also, sort of as just a side note, is I mean, overwhelmingly with these kind of no-knock raids or shooting of people or violation of, you know, destruction of property or killing pets or whatever else you hear, overwhelmingly these are linked to drug-related crimes. And I think we can all agree here that the drug war is something that needs to be addressed and definitely contributes to these laws that are being increasingly enforced more violently.
Yeah, I mean, they're highly profitable on a large scale, and so they're able to afford, and it's so illegal, and that the more the laws create that illegal, the more and more incarcerations behind it, the more and more people are willing to stand up against the law enforcement. And so that's why I say it's self-serving, that they have so much money, they have money to burn on protection against the government that's creating it illegal, that's creating the profit motive that they make money from. And so it's self-serving. It's the circle effect. Going round and round. It's the cause and effect of regulation and control.
I just think it's worth noting that that other kind of failed federal policies are major factors behind a lot of these cases you hear about.
And one of the when talking about incarceration rate as far as drug offenders are concerned, it really kind of tying back to Ferguson, the overwhelming majority are minorities, and they're incarcerated at a much higher rate.
Yeah.
And the actual drug use rate amongst the minorities is higher, but it's not significantly higher than the other population. But they're victimized or incarcerated at a much higher rate, and they really are treated harshly through the criminal process.
Criminal justice system.
Going from arrest to potential conviction, and this builds an animosity against the police state that is much higher than
the enforcement arm of the government.
Yep, and causes situations like you see in Ferguson. Where you have a minority population that has been victimized by an aggressive police force, and you get flare ups like this, and you also get ammunition on the police side to say we need to counteract this, but it's almost like a it's a self-fulfilling prophecy when you treat minorities so harshly because of victimless drug crimes.
Right. But, of course, the irony there is also, you know, who's responsible for distributing these increasingly military-like or redistributing already used military tools, I guess, or who's responsible for...
But they don't even need it.
Well, hold on.
Even if they didn't have it.
Well, yeah, no, but what the point I'm trying to make is who the hypocrisy is that who's responsible for redistributing these things and for setting or for, I guess, enforcing drug policy or, you know, all these different things. It's the federal government. Who is the executive of the federal government? It's President Obama. And yet these people will continue to vote or support the president sort of without questioning. Whereas you see
Obama didn't make these laws though.
This is all from previous people.
Voting
I'm not saying he's the only person responsible, but I'm saying at present he is the executive. He is the person currently in charge of, you know, the executive of the federal government, who is continuing to implement these policies. He's not guilt free in my opinion.
Oh, so, I definitely agree.
So to a certain extent, you from what I'm picking up, as a political figurehead, he's a source of appeasement, and you know, and currying political favor for, you know, the establishment or for forces that want to continue with this type of law enforcement.
Right.
Well, Eric, what you were talking about earlier. So we had that Ferguson event, and then within a week we had that St. Louis shooting. Did you guys see that clip?
No.
The video? So this kid steals two pop cans and sets it down on the street, and he waits for the cops to show up. And he has a knife in his hand. Waits for the cops to show up and just walk straight at the cops. Cops tell him to stop, and just the cops unload clips on the kid. To me, that is a far bigger outrage than what happened in Ferguson, where all the kid had was a knife, and there was more than one police officer there. They could easily subdue the kid, but yet they still just unloaded on the guy because of, you know, his reluctance to not listen to a police officer. Which, yes, you should always listen to a police officer, but like I was talking about earlier, that you don't know who's a cop. How do you know there's a guy who's a cop? But my point is that this kid egged it on. He was crazy, and he was doing it as a martyr thing, as a showing of an example of the lunacy of what the police force is becoming. And I haven't heard anyone say anything like this before, and it's what I glean from it, that he was showing the hypocrisy of the situation, that all he did was he purposely took two pop cans and set them down on the corner sidewalk and just waited for the cops to come. And he just was proving a point of – It was a suicide attempt for sure, just to show of how their mindset is today. And that's the sad fact of life, is that they're willing to I didn't see any danger to anyone around, and yet they just shot the guy dead because he didn't drop his knife or whatever, and he was just standing there. He wasn't charging an officer, but he was just standing there refusing to listen to the cops. And he was executed for it. And that's why that video was stopped. They didn't want to play it anywhere. They didn't want new riots to spread into St. Louis. And I don't know. It was just a shining example of the mentality of the police force today, but no one wants to die, and the people are freaking crazy today. There's no doubt about it. And you don't know who's crazy, who's sane, but we're just in this fear mindset that's being generated through the media. We had this mind control episode last week that has disappeared into the ether. But to me, it's not only it's just the mindset of people today, and it's the police force are trained to be this way, and citizens are being trained in, you know, how they are too, and how they exactly all you said, how minorities are being oppressed by the judiciary system and the enforcement arm of the government, and they see the brunt force of it all. And I think a lot of it has to do with the majority of the population's fear of other people, of fear of their neighbors, fear of other cultures, fear of just other, you know, everyone thinks that, oh, everything's going to get stolen, there's a crime going to happen at any second, and we're all guilty. To me, when I deal with most police officers, and I have friends that are police officers, I know it's just a mindset that most of them have today, that people are guilty always, that there's someone everywhere is guilty of something, that, oh, you have a light on your car, we'll pull them over, see what else is wrong with that person, you know. They might have drugs on their car, they might have this or that, they, you know, who knows, there might be a warrant out for their arrest, they might have not paid their license fee so we could take them downtown and make more revenue. It's just law upon law upon law built upon fear, and it's coming to a head, and there's going to be blowback, and unfortunately, hopefully people don't die over it.
Very true, Kirk. So do you guys have any thoughts on, you know, what we've seen with, you see police militarization, and, you know, seems like random spots. Do you guys see this as something that's going to, you know, continue to become a progressive issue, or when you have, you know, you kind of have flare-ups, like we have riot situations and or situations like Ferguson where they'll come up and then, you know, kind of subside, or Boston, where you had a bombing event, or is this something that could become more and more common as time goes on?
Well, I think this is just my own perspective, but I think it's like just about everything else, where it's an incremental type of a change.
Sure.
I mean, the first thing that kind of comes to my mind in sort of the normalization of these practices is sporting events. The first thing, yeah, I guess that I kind of think of is during, I guess, the Final Four here in Madison, or during, I believe, the hockey championships in University of Minnesota. You saw, I was very much aware, sort of via social media and things, the presence of highly equipped police and that kind of a thing, sort of riot control, that kind of a thing.
DHS.
I've seen some
DHS. I think they're called snipers at mm-hmm. Vikings football games over the last year and a half or so, and they're
right,
you know, right. They're dressed in military fatigues, and you know they're essentially assessing and securing the location. And it's the first time I've ever, you know, outside of a year and a half ago, first time I've ever seen anything like Department of Homeland Security sniper units being around a sporting event.
Right, absolutely. Well, and I guess, yeah, that's the perfect example of kind of what I see as sort of the normalization or slow progression or integration of these practices. In a way that if you were to compare 20 years ago to what they'll be like 10 years in the future or something, it would be a shocking difference. But in the kind of the slow incremental progression of time, goes unnoticed.
Yeah, so it's essentially, desensitizes you when you have sensational events or even events that aren't sensational, and you see them, you see this type of behavior personnel in each situation. You know, really, 10 years ago, it's just hard to remember anything like this happening. And you see, you know, to Lydia's point, just more and more events. Or, you know, sometimes it's conspicuous, and you can look at Ferguson or Boston as an example. Sometimes it's inconspicuous. You can look at it as a Final Four event or a sporting event.
Right, or I guess, I mean, just sort of all of these different things that if they were to happen, I would say for sure, like pre-9/11, but just even a few years ago, the other thing that comes to mind is I know recently I had heard they were doing military helicopter drills in the Twin Cities with no advance sort of
notification.
I mean, these kind of things, was more so kind of what you were saying about Vikings games or sporting events or the presence of those type of things. Right. But, yeah, I mean, over time, that's sort of...
Connection's going bad.
Yeah, Lydia is kind of, she is, I don't hear her.
Oh, yeah, this is the second time they've done the training here in Twin Cities. I read an article about it in the Star Tribune on Sunday.
I'm just going to draw. Yeah, she's completely off.
Well, I think, you know, in my opinion, we're looking at a future where this is going to continue to become more pervasive if something's not done about it.
And I think that's the concern. I think that's to speak for Lydia, that's the point of the show, of this topic in the show, is, you know, there is a threat against civil liberties that potentially is occurring as a result of the militarization of law enforcement.
Well, I look at what happened after the Boston bombing, and that's all the more that I need for explanation. There was a door-to-door searching going on, Fourth Amendment protection anymore. It was martial law. You had people's houses being invaded. I mean, to me, that was absolutely horrible. And I think more of that's going to happen if it's not checked.
And you're back, Lydia.
Yep. I'm sorry. I got cut off there for a second. What was sort of the response to that? I'm sorry.
Matt, go ahead and summarize.
What was that?
Matt had a good summary as to what we're talking about.
Well, so essentially, I just said that I think if we don't do something about it now, that it's going to become a more pervasive police militarization. Like, based on what we've been talking about tonight, it's going to become a more pervasive thing. And we're just based on looking at what happened after the Boston bombing, how people's homes were invaded with no Fourth Amendment protection, just based on declaring martial law because they were looking for these two kids. I think it's a serious problem that needs to be tackled now as opposed to when it's too late. And for an example, I just took my concealed carry recertification course. And when I took the course, it was with a retired assistant director of the FBI. And she was talking about how law enforcement now is no longer taught to be a reactive force. Now they're an active force, which means that they run into an emergency situation instead of waiting to see what happens. And when I heard that, it was actually kind of remarkable to me because I remember that from some of the reading I've done in the past about military tactics, and that's what the military does. And to understand that they're rushing in an offensive manner is the exact opposite of what the original purpose of the police was in the past. We look at a situation where people no longer feel like there's a service portion of the police department, so it's, you know, protect and serve, that and instead we're looking at an Orwellian style, if you guys have any expectation that your constitutional rights are going to be protected, you're wrong. Because as soon as something happens that they deem enough, meaning... a bomb goes off that injures 15 people, your rights are gone. And that's where I think the biggest problem is.
Yeah, so
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would too. It's a serious issue that isn't getting nearly enough attention. You hear sensational conversation stories, but you don't a lot of times hear conversation around why this is occurring and what some of the potential concerns are or should be around this, and it is. A concern over hard line control.
Right. And they mentioned, in that threat management clip that you played, Eric. Mm-hmm. No one wants to live. No one wants to live or stay in a place that is unsafe. I mean, to say that we're anti safety or anti security would be misrepresenting the argument, but it's there's a perspective of what is going too far, violating people's basic rights of free speech, right to due process kind of a things. And that line is because there's so who's invasionalized sort of the side of security at to liberty. I think we all agree. That's a person that needs to be
continued. I'd agree with you, Lydia, but you're
sorry. Can you hear me?
Pretty badly. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Oh, sorry about
that. You're on again.
Fading out.
Well, folks,
Let's see if Lydia can't come in to wrap this up. She's kind of fading
in and
in.
Out. All right,
fading out. Are you back?
Oh, is that better?
It is better. So if you want to tie,
I connect.
Are you back or no, Lydia?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
I think so. Yes? Okay.
Yes, you're back.
Basically, kind of the final point I kind of wanted to add was, I mentioned in that clip we played previously that no one wants to live or work in a place that they feel is unsafe. And I think to say that we are, in any way anti-safety or anti-security would be misrepresenting sort of a perspective here. But that being said, I think the conversation of security at any cost, or specifically security to any cost of liberty, whether it be, the First Amendment, right to due process, that kind of thing, is a conversation that should be continued.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There is a significant reason for concern, and hopefully this conversation is explored more, and more and more people are aware of the ramifications of what could potentially result from what's going on. And I think that's, what all of us could agree that it's a serious concern. You could look down the road, you could look down 10 years and potentially see, a militarized police state enforcing law. Right.
Yep. Increasing the numbers of laws and more forceful means of implementing them is not, to me, the ideal situation.
You got anything else, Danny? Nothing.
Nope, not really. This sounds like all wasted tax money to me.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks. Well, this has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 24. It's been Eric Taylor, Kirk Pettis, Danny Ning, Lydia Tabbitt, and myself, Matt Winter.